Welcome to Conscious Voices, a weekly program dedicated to bringing you alternative points of view and to challenging popular assumptions in order to help you be better informed and civically engaged. I'm Evan Davis, your host for this edition. Lots of things making the news this week, but one truly historic development is taking place in Israel and in Israeli-occupied Palestine. You've no doubt heard about the latest escalation between the right-wing Israeli government and even farther right-wing Israeli settlers and nationalists on the one hand, and Palestinians both in Gaza, in the refugee camp, and in Israel itself on the other. Major news outlets in the U.S. are portraying the latest violence as a matter of Palestinian aggression having been met with a disproportionate force from Israel in self-defense. Few are acknowledging that the latest conflict arose when Israeli troops threatened to evict Palestinian families from a neighborhood in East Jerusalem, which is recognized internationally as a part of occupied Palestine. Israeli troops then blocked access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan, the Muslim high holiday, and this drew the ire of many Palestinians. When several hundred Palestinians managed to assert their right to access the mosque, Israeli troops opened fire with rubber bullets and tear gas and flash grenades, seriously wounding dozens, then in a nearby street skirmish, killing one man. The Palestinian governing organization, Hamas, apparently retaliated by firing a few rockets into Israel, and Israel responded by firing missiles into Gaza, destroying several multi-story buildings and killing dozens, including several children. Undaunted, Hamas has continued to lob rockets into Israel, and Israel has continued with its bombing campaign, and even discussing a ground invasion. In Israel itself, riotous mobs of Jewish nationalists have assaulted Israeli Arabs and even assaulted other Jews who they've mistaken as Arabs, and Israeli Arabs are fighting back and even initiating a few assaults. Some are calling this a potential third Palestinian uprising, while President Biden has only urged both sides to de-escalate, while saying nothing about the Jerusalem evictions, the disproportionate retaliations by Israel, or the illegal occupation that persists in despite of international law. Indeed, this has reiterated what has become an American foreign policy mantra when it comes to Israel, that Israel has the right to defend itself. Never do we hear that Palestinians should be accorded the same right. Meanwhile, video footage of the two buildings in Gaza collapsing after being bombed is reminiscent of the World Trade Center bombing in 2001, which would equate the Israeli state with terrorism. To shed some light on the current events and to recap some background, we have two reports from Al Jazeera, one from the BBC, and one from Vox, which we'll start with, that gives some historical background.
One of the biggest myths about the Israel-Palestine conflict is that it's been going on for centuries, all about ancient religious hatreds. In fact, while religion is involved, conflict's mostly about two groups of people who claim the same land, and it really only goes back about a century to the early 1900s. Around then, the region along the eastern Mediterranean we now call Israel-Palestine, been under Ottoman rule for centuries, was religiously diverse, including mostly Muslims and Christians, also a small number of Jews who lived generally in peace. It was changing in two important ways. First, more people in the region were developing a sense of being not just ethnic Arabs, but Palestinians, a distinct national identity. At the same time, not so far away in Europe, more Jews were joining a movement called Zionism, which said that Judaism was not just a religion, but a nationality, one that deserved a nation of its own. And after centuries of persecution, many believed a Jewish state was their only way of safety and saw their historic homeland in the Middle East as their best hope for establishing it. In the first decades of the 20th century, tens of thousands of European Jews moved there. After World War I, the Ottoman Empire collapsed, and British and French empires carved up the Middle East, the British taking control of a region it called the British Mandate for Palestine. At first, the British allowed Jewish immigration. But as more Jews arrived, settling into farming communities, tension between Jews and Arabs grew. Both sides committed acts of violence, and by the 1930s, the British began limiting Jewish immigration. In response, Jewish militias formed to fight both the local Arabs and to resist British rule. Then came the Holocaust, leading many more Jews to flee Europe for British Palestine and galvanizing much of the world in support of a Jewish state. In 1947, as sectarian violence between Jews and Arabs there grew, the United Nations approved a plan to divide British Palestine into two separate states, one for Jews, Israel, and one for Arabs, Palestine. The city of Jerusalem, where Jews, Muslims, and Christians all have holy sites, was to become a special international zone. The plan was meant to give Jews a state, to establish Palestinian independence, and to end the sectarian violence that the British could no longer control. The Jews accepted the plan, and they declared independence as Israel. But Arabs throughout the region saw the UN plan as just more European colonialism trying to steal their land. Many of the Arab states, who had just recently won independence themselves, declared war on Israel in an effort to establish a unified Arab Palestine where all of British Palestine had been. The new state of Israel won the war, but in the process, they pushed well past their borders under the UN plan, taking the western half of Jerusalem and much of the land that was to have been part of Palestine. They also expelled huge numbers of Palestinians from their homes, creating a massive refugee population whose descendants today number about 7 million. At the end of the war, Israel controlled all of the territory except for Gaza, which Egypt controlled, and the West Bank, named because it's west of the Jordan River, which Jordan controlled. This was the beginning of the decades-long Arab-Israeli conflict. During this period, many Jews in Arab-majority countries fled or were expelled, arriving in Israel. Then something happened that transformed the conflict. In 1967, Israel and the neighboring Arab states fought another war. When it ended, Israel had seized the Golan Heights from Syria, the West Bank from Jordan, and both Gaza and the Sinai Peninsula from Egypt. Israel was now occupying the Palestinian territories, including all of Jerusalem and its holy sites. This left Israel responsible for governing the Palestinians, a people it had fought for decades. In 1978, Israel and Egypt signed the U.S.-brokered Camp David Accords. Shortly after that, Israel gave Sinai back to Egypt as part of the peace treaty. At the time, this was hugely controversial in the Arab world. Egyptian President Anwar Sadat was assassinated in part because of outrage against it. But it marked the beginning of the end of the wider Arab-Israeli conflict. Over the next few decades, the other Arab states gradually made peace with Israel, even if they never signed formal peace treaties. But Israel's military was still occupying the Palestinian territories of the West Bank and Gaza, and this is when the conflict became an Israeli-Palestinian struggle. The Palestinian Liberation Organization, which had formed in the 1960s to seek a Palestinian state, fought against Israel, including through acts of terrorism. Initially, the PLO claimed all of what had been British Palestine, meaning it wanted to end the state of Israel entirely. Fighting between Israel and the PLO went on for years, even including a 1982 Israeli invasion of Lebanon to kick the group out of Beirut.
The stillness of the ceasefire in southern Lebanon was shattered today by the sound of guns, bombs, and planes.
Now, the PLO later said it would accept dividing the land between Israel and Palestine, but the conflict continued. As all of this was happening, something dramatic was changing in the Israel-occupied Palestinian territories. Israelis were moving in. These people are called settlers, and they made their homes in the West Bank and Gaza, whether Palestinians wanted them or not. Some moved for religious reasons, some because they want to claim the land for Israel, some just because the housing is cheap, often subsidized by the Israeli government. Some settlements are cities with thousands of people, others are small communities deep into the West Bank.
If you've always felt a deep yearning for Jerusalem, now is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity not only to stand within its gates, but also to build the home of your dreams there.
Settlers are followed by soldiers to guard them, and the growing settlements force Palestinians off of their land and divide communities. Short-term, they make the occupation much more painful for Palestinians. Long-term, by dividing up Palestinian land, they make it much more difficult for the Palestinians to ever have an independent state. Today, there are several hundred thousand settlers in occupied territory, even though the international community considers them illegal. By the late 1980s, Palestinian frustration exploded into the Intifada, which is the Arabic word for uprising. It began with mostly protests and boycotts, but soon became violent. Israel responded with heavy force. A couple hundred Israelis, over 1,000 Palestinians died in the first Intifada. Around the same time, a group of Palestinians in Gaza, considered the PLO too secular, too compromise-minded, created Hamas, a violent extremist group dedicated to Israel's destruction. By the early 1990s, it's clear that Israelis and Palestinians have to make peace. The leaders from both sides sign the Oslo Accords. This is meant to be the big first step toward Israel maybe someday withdrawing from the Palestinian territories and allowing an independent Palestine. The Oslo Accords establish the Palestinian Authority, allowing Palestinians a little bit of freedom to govern themselves in certain areas. Hardliners on both sides oppose the Oslo Accords. Members of Hamas launch suicide bombings to try to sabotage the process. The Israeli right protest peace talks with ralliers calling Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin a traitor and a Nazi. Not long after Rabin signs the second round of Oslo Accords, a far-right Israeli shoots him to death in Tel Aviv. This violence showed how extremists on both sides can use violence to derail peace, keep a permanent conflict going as they seek the other side's total destruction. That's a dynamic that's been around ever since. Negotiations meant to hammer out the final details on peace drag on for years, and a big Camp David summit in 2000 comes up empty. Palestinians come to believe peace isn't coming, rise up in a second intifada, this one much more violent than the first. By the time it wound down a few years later, about 1,000 Israelis and 3,200 Palestinians had died. But the second intifada really changes the conflict. Israelis become much more skeptical that Palestinians will ever accept peace or that it's even worth trying. Israeli politics shift right. The country builds walls and checkpoints to control Palestinians' movements. They're not really trying to solve the conflict anymore, just to manage it. The Palestinians are left feeling like negotiating didn't work and violence didn't work, and that they're stuck under an ever-growing occupation with no future as a people. That year, Israel withdraws from Gaza. Hamas gains power, but splits from the Palestinian Authority in a short civil war, dividing Gaza from the West Bank. Israel puts Gaza under a suffocating blockade, and unemployment rises to 40%. This is the state of the conflict as we know it today. It's relatively new, and it's unbearable for Palestinians. In the West Bank, more and more settlements are smothering Palestinians, often respond with protests and sometimes with violence, though most just want normal lives. In Gaza, Hamas and other violent groups have periodic wars with Israel. The fighting overwhelmingly kills Palestinians, including lots of civilians. In Israel itself, most people have become apathetic. For the most part, the occupation keeps the conflict relatively removed from their daily lives, with moments of brief but horrible violence. There's little political will for peace. No one really knows where the conflict goes from here. Maybe a third intifada, maybe the Palestinian Authority collapses. But everyone agrees that things as they are now can't last much longer. Israel's occupation of the Palestinians is too unstable to last, and that unless something dramatic changes, whatever comes next will be much worse.
Tension is running high in occupied East Jerusalem after Israel stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque during prayers. Many Palestinians were then forced from their homes and dozens killed in Israeli airstrikes on Gaza. As Palestinian anger grows, could we see a third uprising? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Hashim Ahlbarra. Tensions have been simmering for weeks in occupied East Jerusalem. But on Monday, the situation took a dangerous turn when Israeli police stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, injuring hundreds of Palestinians. The armed group Hamas responded by firing rockets into Israel, which in turn sparked the airstrikes on Gaza. More than 24 Palestinians were killed, among them 9 children, in the Israeli attacks. And at least 2 Israeli women were killed by the rockets. Hamas had warned it would act after the raid on Al-Aqsa, when Israeli police used rubber bullets, stun grenades and tear gas. occupied East Jerusalem had been on edge anyway because Palestinian families are being threatened with eviction from their homes. Israeli settlers have waged legal battles in an attempt to force the Palestinians from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. Al Jazeera's correspondents have been following the developments on both sides of the conflict. We start with Harry Fawcett from Damascus Gate in occupied East Jerusalem.
Well, these simmering tensions, this violence, it all really began with the situation here at the beginning of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan on the steps of Damascus Gate, the decision by the Israeli security forces to block it off to the usual kind of gatherings that we see nightly during Ramadan. It was a real source of anger, a source of protest and skirmishes between Palestinians and the Israeli security forces. All of that fueled and magnified by what was taking place in a nearby neighborhood, Sheikh Jarrah, where there was the imminent threat of evictions on Palestinian families who'd been living there for generations. And all of that boiling over on Monday, those scenes we saw on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound courtyards, those very violent scenes with Israeli security forces moving in great numbers, and of course leading to that deadline given by Hamas for a complete withdrawal by the Israeli forces by 6 p.m. local time on Monday. Just after that, the launching of 7 long-range rockets on the Jerusalem area. For Israel, the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that that was crossing a red line and required a forceful response. We're seeing that forceful response now, and the Israeli government is promising that it will last for days. As well as that, as the death toll mounts inside Gaza, wave after wave of rocket fire coming out from inside the territory itself. So it's an extremely volatile situation, and also worth mentioning something that's being less reported, the spread of violent protest to Palestinian, Israeli and mixed towns. There is a real danger of that violence continuing to spread throughout Israel, turning into potential inter-community violence. We've seen one instance of that already with a Palestinian killed by gunfire by a Jew. We're talking about civilian against civilian inside an Israeli town overnight. That's an extremely dangerous and volatile situation itself. Harry Fawcett for Inside Story in occupied East Jerusalem.
Nida Ibrahim reports from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank.
There have been several calls for protests in different cities in the occupied West Bank, and we've seen some of them head to confrontation points with the Israeli army, such as Israeli military checkpoints in the occupied West Bank. We know that East Jerusalem and Gaza are separated from the occupied West Bank by Israeli military checkpoints that Palestinians would need permits to be able to go to. So they wanted to show their anger and say that even though they can't be with their fellow Palestinians physically, they are doing what they can because they believe that they are living in the same plight under the same Israeli occupation and its measures. We've seen a lot of frustration among Palestinians when it comes to how the Palestinian Authority is dealing with the latest escalation. They believe they've given a very soft stance. And this is why this position was manifested in some of the protests we've seen in Ramallah. One of the protests, we've seen officials holding hands walking in the protest while the younger generation was leaving a gap between them. It was a deliberate gap to show that they are not following their leadership. When we asked some of the Palestinians if they know that there's an Arab League meeting on Tuesday, many of them told us that they don't even care to know because they believe that the Arabs have failed them and they are left to fight the Israeli occupation on their own.
Countries worldwide have appealed for a de-escalation of tensions. While Western capitals have called for the violence to stop, they've hit out at Hamas for its rocket attacks. The UN held an emergency meeting, but no statement was issued. The head of the Arab League condemned the violence by Israel against Palestinians and its attacks on Gaza. Jordan described Jerusalem as, quote, a red line and called for an end to provocative measures. Turkey called on world leaders to take effective action against what it called Israeli terror. Let's bring in our guests in Ramallah. Saleh Hijazi is Deputy Regional Director for the Middle East and North Africa at Amnesty International in Tel Aviv. Yaakov Amidror, former National Security Advisor to the Prime Minister of Israel and former Major General, also in Ramallah, Noor Ouda, political analyst and founding member of the Democratic National Assembly. Welcome to the program. Saleh, the events which continue to unfold at this particular moment, is this something that could be contained by all the parties, or do you see the situation spinning out of control now?
Well, I would say it could be contained if we can break the circle of impunity that has been existing in Israel and occupied territories for many years. We have a great opportunity, historic opportunity, with the International Criminal Court opening an investigation into the situation in occupied Palestinian territory. This could be a new chapter for what happens in Israel and occupied territories, whereby international law and the respect for human rights can be front and center into how things go on the ground and how the international community deals with the situation. The recent events are very worrying because they are reminiscent of what happened in 2014 in Gaza, which could arguably be said that the most devastating and destructive Israeli military operation in the occupied Palestinian territories, wreaking major havoc among civilian life and the population there. It is extremely worrying. Mm-hmm. The only reason this could happen and we could see the violations continue is because there is impunity. There's no accountability for the continuous human rights and international law violations.
Yaakov, by storming the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, firing rubber bullets, stun grenades, tear gas inside the mosque, what was Israel trying to achieve when, you know, these are very important, religiously speaking, moments for Muslims all over the world and for Palestinians in particular?
As you know, this is the holiest place for Jews. It's the Temple Mountain. It's the temple, the Jewish temple was there almost 1,700 years before the Islam came to Jerusalem. So from the Jewish point of view, this is the holiest place for us. And if the Palestinians would not begin rioting, throwing stones into the walling wall, trying to prevent Jews from visiting the holy place for the Jews, the police would not come in. It's a very quiet place many days during the year. And if the Palestinians do not initiating such rioting, such attitude towards the Jews who are praying down near the walling wall, I don't see the police doing anything. So the initiation of all this event was done by the Palestinians against the Jews in Jerusalem. And remember, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel and was Jewish city 2,000 years before Islam came to this area.
Okay, I see your point. No, it's the Palestinians who are to blame.
Well, of course, if you're the colonizer and you were brutalizing Palestinians day in and day out for over 50 years, sure, there's no way you're going to find fault with the brutality of Israeli police on a daily basis, much less an attack on Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Having said that, I think it was very clear to the entire world what was happening, and that's why we saw blanket condemnation of these Israeli measures. We saw blanket condemnation as well of the racist marches of Israeli settlers who are completely unhinged and protected by Israeli soldiers marching through occupied Jerusalem, chanting death to Arabs. So the provocations, the sparks of this escalation have, you know, they were there, they were accumulating over days, specifically throughout the month of Ramadan, when even the access of Palestinian Jerusalemites to areas they traditionally go to after breaking their fast, like the Damascus Gate, was restricted. The writing was over all over the wall, but because of very petty political calculus, it was allowed to continue. These are the allies of Benjamin Netanyahu, and he wanted to show them that he's still their friend. And now we are where we are because of all of that.
Saleh, the focal point of the discontent, which soon degenerated into a wider confrontation, was Sheikh Jarrah, where families are facing evictions. Now, there is a hearing which is expected by the Israeli Supreme Court. Do you see an outcome that could potentially change because of the latest developments on the ground?
Unless Israel dismantles that discriminatory system that it imposes on Palestinians, no outcome would be positive. There's been continuous dispossession of Palestinians. For example, Sheikh Jarrah has a great story. This is not the first time that Palestinians are evicted from their homes to make place for settlers. East Jerusalem is an occupied city. Its population, the Palestinian population there, is protected under international humanitarian law. And since 1967, when Israel illegally annexed that part of the city, it has pursued policies of demographic engineering, which translated into forced displacement of Palestinians and the expansion and building of illegal settlements on the other side. Forced displacement means the demolition of Palestinian homes, restricting how much they can plan and build, and their residency revocation, pushing them out of this territory. Unless international law, human rights, are front and center to how Israel and the international community deals with the Palestinian population there and that part of the city, the occupied East Jerusalem, we will see a continuous violation of rights and continuous forced displacement of the Palestinian population there.
Yaakov, the expropriation of land for the settlers has been denounced by the UN, by the international institutions. Do you see the next government in Israel changing course?
Look, Israel is a state with law, unlike many countries in the Middle East. They appeal to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will make a decision. I don't know when, and I don't know what will be the decision. It's in the hand of the court. And in Israel, we obey the law, and if the decision of the Supreme Court will be that we should let the Palestinians to continue to live in these houses, they will. If the decision of the Supreme Court will be that they have to leave the place because it belongs to other people who apply to the court, they will have to leave. It's a legal issue between the two groups. One is saying it's mine, and the other one is saying, no, it's mine. And both appealed to the court. And at the end, it will be decided by the court. Israel is a state in which, when the court made a decision, and you never know before the court make the decision what the decision will be, that will be obeyed by, at least by the authorities in Israel, no question about it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And it very much depends what will happen in the court. I have one remark about the issue of, settlers are taking place of Arabs in East Jerusalem. Uh-huh. Ironically, and it's almost impossible by nature, the number of Palestinians in Jerusalem is bigger now. Much more Palestinians are living now in East Jerusalem than in 67. So if those people who spoke were out about the policy of, taking the places of the Palestinians by settlers and so on and so forth, all these accusations which do not connect it to the reality. How it is that the number of Palestinians in Jerusalem is growing all the time, and Palestinians from the West Bank want to move into Jerusalem. The situation of the Palestinians in Jerusalem is so bad, while so many Palestinians are immigrating from the West Bank into Jerusalem and ask to have Israeli papers. So there is, contradiction in the reality.
I feel like
You didn't stop the two other guys. So don't stop me, please.
Go ahead.
It is ironic that what they describe is against the reality on the ground.
Yes. But I just have to remind you that the housing projects in Sheikh Jarrah was started in 1956, and then there was an agreement between Jordan and the UN to hand over ownership of those places to the Palestinians back in the 60s. Come 67 and things changed on the ground. Go ahead.
With all due respect, asked me a question and I answered, and you didn't ask them, you asked me.
No.
So it is my view. The number
number of Palestinians in Jerusalem is growing all the time because Palestinians are immigrating from the West Bank into Jerusalem. They're right. And the situation of the Palestinians in Jerusalem is so bad. Why do they immigrating from the West Bank into Jerusalem?
Noah, is this going to be purely legal or a political battle, particularly as far as the case of Sheikh Jarrah is concerned?
No, this is. I mean, anyways, the Israeli courts are part and parcel of the regime of colonial occupation. And report after report, study after study prove that they are no more than tools to provide cover for the dispossession of Palestinians and the systematic discrimination against Palestinians. We have yet to see a court rule in favor of Palestinian families fighting for their property. Israel legislates laws to ensure that Palestinians are discriminated against, while Israeli settlers and settler organizations can claim land and property belonging to Palestinians. Palestinians who actually have legitimate claim and deeds of their property cannot do the same in what is now recognized as Israel proper. So that the argument is a bit upside down, but again, that's not surprising given the fact that we're talking about, you know, a colonial regime trying to market itself when it is so clearly exposed for what it is. The issue in Jerusalem is not one of a real estate dispute. It's one of a colonial occupation. There is occupier and occupied. Denying that fact, making it look otherwise, doesn't change the fact. That is the fact. Palestinians are in Jerusalem, of course. Their numbers are increasing. Well, you know, we have families just like all other humans. But at the end of the day, we're not in Jerusalem because life is good and Israel is treating us well. We're in Jerusalem because that's our homeland. And we have every right to stay. And we have every right to move freely between Jerusalem and Palestinian cities. It's not emigration. It's the right to freedom of movement.
Let's move forward because we have different angles to cover, Saleh. The muted international response when it comes to this particular confrontation could be an indication that the world would like to see the Palestinians making compromises for them to be able to move forward. They cannot just be stuck in a mindset about the past.
Well, if it is about the Sheikh Jarrah, it is about basically Palestinians staying in their own homes. I mean, what can you change about that? The Palestinians in the Sheikh Jarrah have been displaced already once. I mean, what's happening now has already happened in 1948. These families come from Yaffa and Haifa and have been moved and then settled there by the UN Relief and Works Agency. In 2009, 2010, there was a first wave of forced displacement whereby some families were taken out and settlers took over their homes. And we're seeing this again, and we'll see it, you know, carry on later if this, you know, the system of institutionalized discrimination does not stop. There are laws in Israel, and here I'll bring the example of the entry to Israel law, which treats Palestinians, original inhabitants of the city, as foreigners, as people who are coming to visit, and prevents, you know, to your guest, it is not right to say that Palestinians from the West Bank are immigrating to the city. There are laws that prevent Palestinians from being able to live where they want. And the entry to Israel law is a stark example of that, where there's clear discrimination against Palestinians in text of the law. If a Palestinian from East Jerusalem is married to a Palestinian from the West Bank, that Palestinian from the West Bank cannot have the right to live in East Jerusalem. The law prevents them from doing that.
Okay. Yaakov, where does it leave the future of the relationship between Israel and Palestine? The international community has been saying that the expansion of settlements is the biggest threat. And this, I'm quoting the EU, which said that this is something that will cause further damage to the prospects of for a viable Palestinian state. How do you see the future?
First, we have a law that Palestinians cannot immigrate from the West Bank into Jerusalem because the number of Palestinians who want to move from the West Bank into Jerusalem is such high that it cannot be they cannot be swallowed by the Jerusalem area. If they and ask yourself the question why they want to immigrate into Jerusalem if the situation is so bad in Jerusalem. First. Second, the issue of the Palestinians-Israeli relation is not new. The Palestinians were against the immigration of Jews into their homeland since the beginning of the 19th century. The Palestinians didn't accept the 47 decision of the United Nations to make here in between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean two states. That was the beginning of the war in 48, which is ended from the Palestinian point of view with the Nakba and from the Israeli point of view with independence. It's not something new. If the Palestinians will not agree to compromise, mm-hmm. and what they want is to destroy Israel, they will never succeed. I heard that you people are saying in Al Jazeera that it is the 13th uprising of the Palestinians. And what they achieved in this 13th uprising? Nothing. Why? They are not ready to compromise.
Okay.
The Jews in Israel in 47 said, we don't like the decision of the United Nations. But if for having an independent state and peace between the Palestinians and the Jews, we will have to accept two states, we are ready. What the Palestinians said, never a Jewish state, we will destroy you, whatever you will do.
Okay.
So they tried, they didn't succeed, the result is the Nakba, and they can continue to do the same in the future, and they will succeed as well as they succeeded in the past.
Almost 30 years since the peace agreement between the Palestinians and the Israelis. The central element of that package was basically that the Americans will be able to play role as a broker. Now with Biden, who seems to be determined this time not to be bogged down in further Middle East conflicts, do you think that the Americans have to rethink their policy in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict?
Well, I think they should. I'm not sure they will, though. I think the Biden administration simply doesn't have the backbone or the interest, really, to realign U.S. policy with international law, to realign U.S. policy with the growing consensus among Americans, especially the constituents of this administration, the Democratic Party, to support Palestinian rights, to support international law, and to reject this blank check for Israeli violations and Israeli actions and to bankroll these violations as well, to finally condition military aid to Israel, which is a military superpower in the region. All of these things would be in the interest of the American administration. I don't see it happening, although strategically speaking, I see that the trend is moving in the right direction and that more and more U.S. Elected officials are aligning their positions with the moral and the logical way to go, which is to say that there has to be a standard upon which we mm-hmm. have relations with countries, and they must apply to all. The exceptionalism that Israel mm-hmm. has enjoyed for Thank more you. Than 50 years, that has allowed it to do all of these things, has to stop. And this arrogance mm-hmm. With which Palestinians are treated is simply untenable.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there, but I promise you, Saleh Hijazi, Yaakov, Amizrul, Noor Ouda, that we will go back and revisit this particular story as it continues to unfold. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJ Inside Story. From me, Hashim Ahlbala, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.
The UN has expressed fears of a full-scale war as the deadly conflict between Israeli forces and Palestinians continues for a third day. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu warned Palestinian militants that this was just the beginning, threatening to strike with blows they haven't dreamed of. Tonight, President Biden said he had spoken to Mr. Netanyahu and said he hoped the violence would end sooner rather than later. At least 65 Palestinians, including 15 children, and 6 Israelis are reported to have been killed since Monday. In the past few days, Palestinian militants have fired a mass barrage of rockets into Israel, including on Tel Aviv. And Israel has carried out a heavy bombardment of Gaza, launching hundreds of airstrikes. Tensions have been growing in Jerusalem, partly fueled by a long-running threat to evict Palestinians from their homes in East Jerusalem. It all came to a head on Friday at Al-Aqsa Mosque. The site where it stands is highly sensitive, sacred for both Muslims and Jews. Israeli police used CS gas and stun grenades at the mosque, and Palestinian youth threw rocks at them. Here's our Middle East correspondent, Tom Bateman.
The world's asking if the region's on the brink of war. People who work to this feel it's already here. Palestinians in Gaza face the fiercest Israeli bombardment since the last all-out conflict. Israel says it's going after militant leaders. Some were killed in their homes. But civilians died in this strike, say Palestinian health officials. In Gaza, a territory under blockade, grief quickly turns to anger. Dozens have died here since the violence erupted on Monday, and they're still counting their dead. Rocket fire from Gaza has continued deep into Israel. And the sirens are near non-stop in towns close by.
Okay, that's an interception. Let's get in. Jimmy.
As we've heard, airstrikes pound the Gaza Strip just a couple of miles away. Throughout the course of this morning into the afternoon, more retaliation, more fire from Gaza.
Under fire, Asher and his son Maor ran for safety. But their neighbour, an 89-year-old woman, didn't make it. She's seriously injured. Her carer died in the strike. There are growing international calls for restraint. But for now, it seems that no one here is listening.
It is the intensity of these attacks that has led both sides to say they will step up their strikes in retaliation. A descent into much further violence seems inevitable.
More rockets are shot down in Israel's skies. Tonight, in a mixed Jewish-Arab town, I saw how fear and chaos is spreading. Violence between Jews and Arabs inside Israel is spiraling. Here, Jewish extremists attack an ambulance and then check a car to see if Arabs or Jews are inside. Along the coast, a popular Arab restaurant comes under attack. In another mixed town, a Jewish man is beaten by Arab Israelis. A synagogue has also been torched. Israel's leader calls it anarchy. A wave of anger that started in Jerusalem has spilled out to the occupied territories and into Israel itself. The country's engulfed in multiple flashpoints. It may be too late to contain it now.
A curfew being enforced in one of those towns. It seems to be largely ineffective tonight. And Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said that he is now considering sending in army troops to some of those areas experiencing those kinds of confrontations. As to the wider military conflict, as you were saying, Sophie, the US President Joe Biden says that his expectation and hope is it should end sooner rather than later, while also saying that he believes Israel has the right to defend itself. But with more airstrikes pounding the Gaza Strip in the last couple of hours and more rocket fire within that time, that certainly seems, from this perspective, a long way off.
Our Middle East correspondent Tom Bateman in Jerusalem. Thank you. Well, let's talk to Rushdie Abu Alouf, who's in Gaza City. And what's the situation there tonight?
The sound of bombs and airstrikes are continuing shortly after midnight here in Gaza. It's been the longest day of fighting since years. Israel hit hundreds of targets, and Hamas, the militants group, fired hundreds of rockets. This situation is leaving this place in a very grim sort of picture. People are suffering from the sound of sonics, the sound of bombing, a very angry and shocking mood to see the scale of destruction around the Gaza Strip after this very long day and very long night of fighting. And it doesn't seem the night is over yet. In the last 5 minutes, the Israeli airplanes have targeted a place in Khan Yunis. They are talking about also casualties in the place. And the latest Health Ministry figure is talking about more than 60 people killed. Half of them are civilians.
Rushdie Abu Alouf, thank you very much. Well, it's the worst violence in the region for 7 years. Tensions have been mounting in Jerusalem throughout the holy month of Ramadan. Our correspondent Caroline Hawley looks at what has sparked this deadly confrontation.
The conflict between Israelis and Palestinians hasn't made headlines in recent years, but it's been a tinderbox waiting to explode. The spark, Jerusalem, a city of sacred sites and simmering tensions, the heart of the conflict. And now, with depressing familiarity, it's ignited violence once again. So what's behind the latest escalation? Palestinian anger has been mounting for weeks. There have been clashes over a threat to evict dozens of families from their homes in Israeli-occupied East Jerusalem in favour of Jewish settlers. There's also been trouble between Israeli police and Palestinians, infuriated by restrictions on them gathering at the entrance to the Old City at sunset. And then, on the last weekend of Ramadan, came clashes at Al-Aqsa Mosque, where Israeli security forces said Palestinians had been throwing stones. On Monday, Israel accused worshippers of preparing to attack a planned march by Israeli hardliners, and troops stormed into the holy compound. Hamas, which rules the Gaza Strip, is now portraying itself as the protector of Jerusalem, the defender of Muslim worshippers. It's called its barrages of rocket fire Operation Sword of Jerusalem. So why does Jerusalem matter so much? The importance of Jerusalem is perhaps the one thing that the two sides can actually agree on. It has both religious and national significance. The Israelis see it as their eternal, undivided capital, while for the Palestinians, they want it, or at least the eastern part of it, as the capital of their future state. But this latest escalation has gone way beyond Jerusalem. It's revived memories of the war in Gaza in 2014, which left more than 2,000 Palestinians and dozens of Israelis dead. That's the last time there was an explosion of violence on this scale. So what's been the international response? One of growing alarm. The UN Secretary General said peace talks were the only way forward and must be revived. Boris Johnson and the Americans urged Israelis and Palestinians to step back from the brink.
We believe Palestinians and Israelis equally deserve to live with safety and security. And we'll continue to engage with Israelis, Palestinians, and other regional partners to urge de-escalation and to bring calm.
But for now, neither side show the slightest sign of backing down. And as so often, it's civilians on both sides paying the price. Caroline Hawley, BBC News.
And there's more explanation of what's happening on the BBC News website. That's bbc.co.uk/news.
Chants of death to Arabs. Anger and hate has spilled out onto the streets in the coastal city of Bat Yam. Palestinian Israelis and Jewish Israelis living in close proximity, turning on each other. Among many violent incidents, on Wednesday a Palestinian man was dragged from his car by dozens of Jewish Israelis, who continued to beat him even after he lost consciousness. The video is broadcast live on Israeli television. And closer to Tel Aviv, Palestinian businesses were ransacked. The wave of violence has hit dozens of cities and regions across Israel. It's the worst between communities living alongside each other in decades. Israeli officials say they are more violent than the protests that led to the Al-Aqsa Intifada in 2000. Tension came to a boiling point as a court prepared to rule on the forced expulsion of Palestinian families from their homes in the occupied East Jerusalem Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. Israeli journalist Yossi Melman says he's worried about vigilante groups inside Israel running amok. He says they're headed to the abyss as a result of absence of governance and years of incitement. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has asked both sides to stop the attacks. In an attempt to quell the violence, Netanyahu ordered the emergency deployment of border forces. But police tactics are under scrutiny after this video was shared on social media of officers storming a family home in the northern city of Haifa. They can be seen beating an unarmed Palestinian-Israeli man. And to the south of Tel Aviv, the city of Lod has been put under a state of emergency, the first in an Arab community since 1966. It's been one of the worst hit by riots. On Tuesday night, Jewish cars and a synagogue were set alight. A mosque was burned the next day. And Palestinian Musa Hassouna was shot dead by Jewish residents during protests. Even though the court has postponed the hearing on Sheikh Jarrah, many are now more worried about how to stop the violence caused by anger that's been simmering for much longer. Laura Badamanli, Al Jazeera.
Well, Mickey Rosenfeld is Israel's police national spokesman to foreign media, joins us now from West Jerusalem. Good to have you with us. So the latest tension started with fears, concern that Israeli police might uphold an Israeli court order and forcibly evict Palestinians from Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, as well as actions, administrative and security measures taken by Israel in East Jerusalem around the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. My question to you, though, sir, do you accept that you are an occupying power, which this is according to the UN, you are an occupying power which has no legal authority to impose Israeli law in these occupied territories?
Israel and the country that we live in is a country that belongs to the Jewish people with a history of thousands of years back. Israel and the different units, and I'm referring to the IDF and the Israeli National Police, will do everything possible in order to maintain public order and prevent large-scale incidents from taking place in Jerusalem. If we look back just last year when we were dealing here in Israel with COVID-19, Ramadan was very peaceful and very calm and quiet last year.
Okay, if I could jump in
this
then,
year, over the last two
forgive
weeks,
me, but then what you're telling viewers is people like the official spokesperson, Rupert Colville, for the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Refugees, when he said on May the 7th, 2021, and I quote, "Given the disturbing scenes in Sheikh Jarrah over the past few days, we wish to emphasize that East Jerusalem remains part of the occupied Palestinian territory in which international humanitarian law applies, and the occupying power must respect, unless absolutely prevented, the laws in force in the country." You're saying to viewers that, in fact, he's wrong, because, as you said, this is your country. You don't recognize that you're an occupation.
What I'm saying is we're not an occupied force. This country belongs to Israel. Israel is a strong, unique and humanitarian country. At the moment, you've taken out of proportion the Israeli Arabs, unfortunately, with inside Jerusalem, have taken out of proportion a dispute about Sheikh Jarrah. There are many disputes that take place in many different areas, but they can be solved by the Israeli courts. Whatever the Israeli courts will decide will be accepted, both by the Jewish families that live there, as well as by the Israeli-Palestinian families that live there as well. I'm going back to the point that we made, which what happened just 2 weeks ago on the Temple Mount. Thousands of Palestinians arrived there, and instead of celebrating, they gathered rocks and stones and attacked our police officers and Jewish worshippers at the Western Wall. That is something that is unacceptable. As a response, our police units went inside the Temple Mount area, only use non-lethal weapons and disperse that riot. That is something that we've dealt with many times.
You have jumped in many times. If you let me jump in, but UNESCO says on point 5 of its May the 2nd, 2017 ruling that, quote, legislative and administrative measures and actions taken by Israel, the occupying power, it says, are especially, it says in particular, quote, the basic law in Jerusalem are null and void and must be rescinded forthwith. Do you recognize that it's because of your interventions in the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in East Jerusalem that is provoking the reaction from the Palestinians you're complaining about? Do you recognize that?
I have to confirm and make it clear to your viewers as well. The issue of the Temple Mount, the status quo will be kept and held and will continue by Israel. This coordination,
so that's not my
which
question.
Is made
my question
by Israel.
Is UNESCO wrong in saying that your attempts to enforce the basic law in Jerusalem, intervene in, as you call it, Temple Mount, and Palestinians call it the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, are null and void? Do you recognize that, yes or no?
My answer, I will answer you, and my answer is that the Israeli National Police and the Israeli government is making sure that the status quo on the Temple Mount will continue. This is one of the issues that we're dealing with. People are praying on the Temple Mount, and I'm talking about Muslims, 5 times a day in peace and quiet in a respectable manner.
So you're not really answering the question about whether you recognize what UN organizations are saying. Let me quote to you then instead what Human Rights Watch has said in its report of June 4th, 2017. Israeli authorities have since 1967 facilitated the transfer of civilians to the occupied West Bank. Do you accept what UN organizations, what human rights organizations are saying? You are an occupying power that is violating international law.
I can see that you've gathered and put together all the quotes. The point is you and people have to understand and realize you're not talking and interviewing me in 1967. We're talking about 2021.
Sir, I've quoted to you quotes from Rupert Colville in May the 7th, 2021, and I have done my research, and I make no apology for it. These need to be addressed.
That's okay, I understand that.
Are you saying to viewers, the UN, UNESCO, Amnesty International, I've got a quote here if you want to hear it, where they say settling civilians in occupied territories violates international humanitarian law and amounts to a war crime. Are you telling viewers the UN, the International Court of Justice, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch are all wrong and only you are right?
I'm saying... No, what I'm saying is that Jerusalem is not occupied...
Hang on, so you said no. If they're not wrong, then you admit that you are an occupying power that is violating international law by your interventions.
I heard your question, and I will answer your question now. Israel is in charge and is responsible and is making decisions as to what takes place here in Jerusalem, both West and East Jerusalem, together in the different neighborhoods and the different areas. Israel is fully in control of dealing with everything in terms of security. Israel is protecting the Israeli Jewish citizens, as well as Israeli Arabs who are living in the different areas and the neighborhoods. Our responsibility is also to protect, to make sure that there are no frictions between the different sides, the different communities. I'm going back to a very important point, which is a sensitive point, which is what happened on the Temple Mount. We saw thousands of Palestinians taking the law into their own hands and attacking officers and attacking other areas. That is something that is unacceptable. And the Israeli police officers in and around who are guarding the three most holiest sites, the Temple Mount, the Western Wall, and the Church of the Sepulchre, are making sure that we're doing everything to prevent large-scale incidents.
Right. You're describing to me, sir, what you're doing. I don't think you've really addressed the point and the question I've put to you of whether you recognize what these organizations are saying, that what you're doing is taking the law into your own hands. But I'm afraid we are out of time. Thank you very much for explaining your perspective. We'll leave it to the viewers to draw their conclusions.
Some of the information in those reports may have been slightly redundant, but it's important to contrast these varied international sources reporting with what we're receiving from the American mainstream outlets. On Friday, May 14th at 5 p.m., there will be a protest in Columbus at the Capitol Square in downtown, sponsored by a coalition of organizations, including the Ohio State University chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace. I hope to attend and hope to have some audio from that in next week's show, which will air at this time on your community radio stations, WCRSLP 92.7 and 98.3 FM, and WGRNLP 94.1 FM here in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis, and I'll see you then. Take care.